Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome back to the Tech Connects podcast, Business of Your Business. I'm your host, Ryan Ellis, and today I have the pleasure of speaking to Suresh Mahmood of Dialogue Room. And I'm really looking forward to this conversation today. Suresh has amazing experience, and I'm really looking forward to this topic today that we've discussed, and it's about failure. But before we begin talking about failure, but it's not the kind of failure that makes you stop and quit everything. This is the failure you learn from and you build from and you move on from through the experiences that you've gone through. So welcome to the podcast. And I want to start off by how are you doing today? How are things going?
Thank you for having me, Ryan. I am good. It's a lovely day. A lot of Canadians are not too fond of the snow, but I'm still new to Canada and I'm enjoying the snow still. So yeah, it's amazing.
How long have you been in Canada for?
So I moved here at the start of 2019.
Okay. I know we have a lot to go through, but tell myself and tell the viewers, listeners a little bit about yourself and your great company that you've started, Dialogue Room.
Yeah, excellent. So I personally have been a teacher for a while and I've been in the education industry. And within my experience of over 10 years now, I started off with young learners, moved on to pre-college students, and now fairly recently with adult learners. And during this decade, I think I developed this passion for learning what it is, how to do it right, mindset coaching, a lot of buzzwords that we hear these days, because what I've learned in my learning experience is that it's, at the end of the day, it's a mind game. And that's where my interest for Dialogue Room came up, which is basically a platform that encourages learning of the mind in any shape or form, just this eager idea of instilling growth mindset in learners. So they approach the challenges life has to throw at them with eagerness instead of with despair.
Who do you guys primarily work with? Are you working with people that are in companies, or are you looking to work with children like that are in public school, high school kids? Like, is this for everybody, like with the work that you're doing?
So initially, since I've worked with students for a while, I did pitch my idea with my incubator at U of T for students, especially college level students or high school students getting into college, because we see it's like a college readiness program, because we see a lot of students get into college and then they have to figure out everything. And what if all of the tools or strategies they need is given to them beforehand? It will just benefit them and save them a lot of cognitive overload and difficulties that they get into. So the one segment is that we're looking at high school students getting into colleges. And the other is there's another program that focuses on the immigrant population, newcomers to Canada, specifically women. Okay. And that is also because those are the two things I personally resonated well with me. And so, yeah.
You bring up something that piques my interest is having high school students ready for university. And I know, like where I live in Durham, there's been some talk about a shortage of, mentorship for high school kids, a lot of uncertainty with the transition from high school to university, especially with the inability to get co-ops in the last year and working opportunities. Is this something that you've seen as well with the high school students, an uncertainty about the future? Is university, college the right thing? Do I have what it takes and will it take to get into university and succeed?
Most certainly. I would say in my experience of teaching and even in my experience of coming from a country which is primarily there was little importance given to women education, not across the board, but in some ways. I'm originally from Pakistan And I can build off my experience from there and see how the transition I witnessed back in my country and apply that to that approach to my students here and from before. So basically Pakistan being this beautiful country is also originally a very traditional society. And a lot of stress there is given to gender roles, and those gender roles for women usually dealt with homemaking, which is beautiful in its own way. I know a lot of people around me have done that. But my own personal experience has been that in doing that, my my willingness to succeed and my willingness to do better for myself was not appreciated as much. And that experience taught me the value of having mentors, because it's really difficult and it requires a lot of courage for you to pave that way for yourself. And having gone through that experience, and I can elaborate on that in terms of failure and how that, like all of that sewed together in my story, is that I've personally experienced that had I had a mentor, had I had someone having these dialogues with me, the journey would have been easier. And that is a common theme that I saw in students back home and students here, that those children or a privileged class that has those mentors, even in terms of family members, parents, teachers, tend to do a lot better than those who are struggling through not just like figuring out life and what they want out of it, but also not having someone tell them or have that handholding for them. And even in terms of like, as little as choosing courses, what career path to take, because with everything moving online and now with the pandemic as well, we see that there's, like you said, a lot of uncertainty. And that kind of leaves the student or the learner in this learned helplessness, this idea that, oh, I don't know what it's going to be, and there's not enough faith in their own abilities. And that together, that mindset can really affect their choices in life. And then, of course, going back to my own story and how failure played a role in it, is that I knew I wanted to do something with my life other than just being a homemaker, and but I didn't know how to. So I kept looking for avenues and mentors, and they didn't always come in the easiest of ways. And that's why that entire like a quick fact would be that my siblings moved to Canada in 2007, and right from then up until 2014, I applied 6-7 years in a row for a visit visa, and I was rejected each time. And that too, the reasoning mostly was like my ties to my home country weren't strong enough. So just having these roadblocks really made my journey into learning and becoming something rather difficult. And so I valued that process, and I want to make sure that those who are going through the same problems or difficulties don't have to have it this hard.
It's obviously amazing you persevered, because, you know, a lot of people would get rejected once or twice and then maybe call it a day. But the fact that you and your family kept pressing on and, you know, finally getting it after 7 years, you know, is a great detriment to yourself and to your family. So congratulations on that. So one of the things that you and I have been talking about is kind of is failure and entrepreneurship and startup companies. What are some key takeaways that startups should be looking at, or, you know, how can they overcome obstacles in failure when they're starting a business?
Of course. So I would say on an average, what I've observed is entrepreneurs these days are pursuing something they're passionate about. But sometimes those passions are, we don't know it, we think we're focused about it, but they're misappropriated. So when I initially came in and I wanted to, for Dialogue Room to be targeted just towards students, that audience I was excited about before. But over time, I recognized that I was equally interested in adult learners as well. So my first takeaway to entrepreneurs would be that you really need to sit with your idea and understand that sometimes you think you're motivated for the right reasons, or you know exactly what you want, and this is the direction I want to go in. And over time, that fizzles out, and you learn so much about your own self, which reveals to you that there might be a different audience that you could target at, or maybe pivot your idea in a way. And moving from one incubator to the other within the past 6 months, what I've recognized is that the idea of pivoting and iteration is so important. As entrepreneurs, we have a tendency to like our idea or our product or our service so much because we're treating it like our own baby. It's generated on an average from our own mind. So we're so excited about it that we tend to neglect some of the cues that the world is telling us. And I think it's very important that these recurring failures are telling you either something about your own self and how to pivot that in order to look inside and see that maybe I'm directing this, my energies in the wrong way. And the second is to see and really review critically the feedback that's given to you, because there are people out there who are giving you constructive feedback because they genuinely they don't want to rip you apart, or they don't want to rip your idea apart. They want you to excel, and really having that faith in their intentions and taking that constructive feedback in a positive way. So yeah, that openness to pivoting.
A lot of people don't take kindly to, you know, criticism. What are some of the actions that people or companies can do to deal with failure? What does failure teach us as an entrepreneur?
I think we really need to be able to sit with ourselves and just accept failure. For me, for the longest time, initially was that I would want to blame. This didn't work out because of X, Y, and Z. And that blame is usually on the outside and not in the inside. And even when your self-critic is active and is telling you things, it's important to hear that voice and try to address it, because the more you fight it, the more you're in a reactionary mode. And I feel that failure is trying to tell you to just pause for a second and let your internal dialogue not be in such a conflict. And trust your voice, but that voice might need to be pivoted or tweaked in certain ways without it having to so emotionally affect you. So maybe make that detachment between the emotions and the logical.
Have you seen, working here in Canada and working back home in Pakistan, do entrepreneurs on both sides react differently to failure? Companies that are starting up in India, do they react different? Do they take failure differently versus, you know, people that you've worked with here in Canada? Or is it kind of universal?
Definitely not universal, because I think coming into Canada, I had spent 2 years in New York and having had my education there and having spent all my life in Pakistan, I did not perceive of Canada as being like a homogenous society. But being here and like working with incubators and interacting with people, I do see that there are certain nuances and certain cultural norms to Canada, which are across the board, which is very surprising to me, because I was like, where's the individuality? Where's that inclusion and diversity of everybody coming from different countries, bringing in their own expertise and their own experiences? I personally felt that wasn't valued as much. And on the contrary, back home, I would consider Pakistan and our people to be very resilient. There's a concept that we call, commonly known as jugaad, which is that we find it's like the laziest person's easiest way to figure something out because we will find a way. If we need to get our head around something, we'll get 10 heads together, we will figure something out. And I think the primary difference between Pakistan and the way I've seen startups work there And generally in the North America is that because North America is so highly governed and there's so many layers of like even bureaucracy and the do's and don'ts that you have to go through, it gives you very little leeway for certain decision-making. And on the contrary, Pakistan, you have a lot of that power in your own hand where you can really pivot your ideas or move around in the market with a lot of ease.
What one of the things you mentioned is, you know, the importance of, you know, having mentees and mentors. Can you speak a little bit about you know, some of the stuff that you have done or you've experienced with mentorship? You know, what are some of the, I guess, the guidance, some of the good guidance that you've received on both ends from here in Canada and then within Pakistan?
Starting off with Canada, I think having seen that stark difference between the two societies and not being able to make sense of it, I did get in touch with people who really taught me the concept of being coachable, which is that there are times that, and also because you've moved from another country, you're used to certain ways, it's so important for you to remain open to a new setting. And that new setting has 10 awesome things to offer, but 5 different challenges. And if you're not coachable, you're happy with the 10 good things that are coming in, but you're not willing to work on the 5 things that you don't agree with or that at the moment you don't seem to understand. So one thing from my mentors that I've learned is that openness to being coachable.
Awesome. So one of the other things we were discussing was, you know, how you approach being an entrepreneur. You know, what are some of the mental things, the mental resilience that an entrepreneur will need to succeed and to accept failure and grow from that? So what are some of the mental aspects that entrepreneurs should be looking into if they haven't already?
I would say, and something I tell all my learners and students is that growth mindset, where you're not fixated on the idea or a concept or the way you do things. That this is like that rigidity that comes with, oh, this is the only way things can be done, or this is my way. Take it this way or the highway, but just that idea that, okay, I need to have the growth mindset or that flexibility in my mind to stop and listen to the other person and see that there might be value there. And then the second half of the part is that you need to then take that feedback and process in a way that works for you. For me personally, I did take a lot of feedback, and some of that feedback was plain spiteful, in which case it does hurt. But once you see that feedback is spiteful repetitively, you do need to understand that if it's bringing your morale down or making you demotivated, then maybe that's not the source you get your feedback from. So one part of the equation is to have that growth mindset, but two, do not allow your energy or your like access to your mind to everyone, because there are a lot of people who won't understand you and they'll throw stuff at you, which honestly you should not want. It's like reading a bad book, which tells you everything against what you believe in. And you're like, you have that right to just slam it shut. But with people on an average, we're all polite to be like, okay, I'll consider it. When in reality, you should not be considering it.
Excellent. We're going to just change gears here for a minute. You did mention that you worked in New York, and after reading some of your bio on LinkedIn, can you tell me about your work experience with the UN and what the UN has taught you, and have you put anything from the UN into the way that you're working to better yourself, to better, you know, the people around you, and to make a dialogue room successful?
Excellent. So I'll give you a backstory of how I ended up in New York and I got to the UN was that I did my master's on a Fulbright scholarship, and which is like a a well-known prestigious scholarship that brings people from different countries into states, and it's completely paid for and all. So like getting into states and having that experience, I was really curious to know that what's the backstory of this Fulbright scholarship? Why is it that they do what they do? And that got me interested back into the Cold War policies and into international development, humanitarian aid, and what are the different ways that aid looks like. And scholarship funding is just another form of that. And then taking courses on international development, I recognize, okay, then UN was the product of those policies. And I wanted to further delve into it. And that's where, through the Pakistan Mission, I applied for an internship, which basically allowed for me to be in the UN headquarters for 6 months in and out. And I'd be attending different General Assembly and other conferences. And the idea was to take that communication and then report it to my like my direct report. And that basically what that experience with the UN like explained to me is that there's a lot of frustration within the organization as well, because they feel like we discussed, there are a lot of layers of bureaucracies that need to be crossed in order to get to a decision making. But then it also teaches you the value of important work that needs to be done, even if the pace is not as fast as you think it should be. And very contrasting that to the startup world is that the startup world is so eager for that quick exponential growth that they're not tied up in the nitty-gritty of the paperwork or the fine print. And so it's a contrasting world, but there's importance and there's value to both.
Excellent, yeah. Like I said before, everybody's been to the UN, but nobody's ever actually met anybody who's worked at the UN. So it's a very cool story. I want to conclude with strategies, and what are some strategies that people can use to learn from failure? Whether it's within life, work, relationships?
I would say what is my mantra and mission for Dialogue Room as well is that failure is trying to teach you something. And I just feel that people or learners should approach it with a curious mind. And when that is being done, all other factors of it personally affecting you, it turning into negative self-talk, it affecting your future goals, all of those factors go out and you primarily can focus on solving the puzzle. I love mathematics. I've always been into like solving problems, problem solving and being resourceful is like two of my key like skills that I thrive over. And I feel if you could just approach failure as a data point, and try to solve the puzzle and get the lesson out of it and just put it aside, it can really change our approach to it.
Excellent. So going to conclude our conversation, but before I do, what is going on with Dialogue Room for 2021? What's the next year look like for you?
So I think I'm at the stage of exploring it and merging it with my passion for social enterprise. Ideally, what I would want is to partner with universities or programs, which I have a few in the pipeline, to present it as a social enterprise and as a supplementary mindset coaching platform for the two audiences, one being the immigrant women population, newcomers to Canada, and the other being young students getting into college. And then partnering with organizations and sharing my programs with them so they understand the supplemental support that mindset coaching can have for their attendees.
Awesome. Well, I want to thank you for your time this afternoon. I've gotten some really good takeaways from this conversation. So thank you so much. I wish you happy holidays and I look forward to speaking to you soon.
Excellent. Thank you so much for having me, Ryan. It was a pleasure.
Thank you for being on.
Thank you. Bye.
Oh, thank you.